Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Anne Ella. She was Dr. J. Allen Hynek's personal assistant in 1985 before he passed away. And with her own experience of UFO research, aliens, and indeed meeting with aliens, she's got plenty to talk about. And a lot of that is embodied in her book called Dragon in the Sky, Prophecy from the Stars. So, as I said to Anne before we went on air, we've got plenty to talk about. Welcome to the program, Anne.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to be with you.
Right. Now, let's sort of go straight in regarding the book, although I would like to quickly get on to your association with Dr. Allen Hynek. I believe the contents of it come from what you have referred to as 4 years of constant dreams. Now, would that be correct?
Yes, that's right. It started in about 1976, and I started having dreams of aliens and UFOs and other worlds night after night after night. And it just about made me crazy. so I started reading about aliens and UFOs, and everything I picked up had one person's name associated with it, and that was Dr. J. Allen Hynek. So I thought, well, this is the guy that's got to have all the answers. He's the one that's at the center of all the activity. So I wrote him a letter, and I told him about my dreams, and I asked him if he could put me in touch with someone in Arizona that I could talk to that might help me with some of my questions. And I mailed it off and didn't hear a thing from him for about 9 months. And then all of a sudden, one night, the phone rang, and there he was, and said he had just found my letter on the floor behind his desk. So after I got to know him, that was pretty typical. He was sort of an absent-minded professor type, and didn't keep a real neat, orderly office. So he talked to me about the dreams for a little while and then asked if I would send him a log of them. He said that he had a colleague in Switzerland that was doing a research project for the whole world, because he said these dreams are happening to people all over the world, and they were trying to get to the bottom of the cause of it. So I sent it off to him and then never heard another word from him for 5 years. It wasn't until 1985 when I opened up the newspaper in Phoenix, and one of the headlines said, Dr. J. Allen Hynek brings UFO research to Scottsdale, Arizona. I couldn't believe it because it was literally in my backyard. So I was less than 5 minutes away from where they were having the research. So I made it a point to get over there and to meet the people. He wasn't there, and the principals were not there the day I went. But there were people from all over milling around in and out of the center and around the lawn, and I stopped and talked to a couple of people, one from California, one from New Mexico, who had simply had heard that Dr. Hynek was moving to Scottsdale, and they wanted to come and tell him in person about their stories with aliens. So I left a note on the desk and said I had to be involved and that I would volunteer my time and I'd do anything. I'd take the garbage out and feed the cat, whatever it was. And so I got a call from Brian a couple of days later, and he said, sure, come on over and help us set up the office. Mm-hmm. So I did, and the rest is history. I actually didn't meet Dr. Hynek for a couple of weeks after I started there. And when I did, he hadn't remembered. He hadn't remembered the letter and the dreams or that we had even talked, but he pretended like he did. He was trying to be very polite. And
yeah.
So that started 6 months of a very warm friendship and We really had great respect for each other. And I think we met on a certain level that was kind of difficult to explain to people, but later I found out that we had had past lives together in similar situations. So we do come back, and we do meet up with a lot of the same people again.
Yes, I'm sure that must happen. And when you look back at the way you met him and finally sort of got to work with him, as happens with many people, you can always find what you call coincidences that led to it happening. So I think we have to believe that when something is intended to take place like that, somebody seems to be arranging it for us.
Absolutely. And I am just a firm believer that there are no accidents, that there are no, everything is planned. I'm a firm believer.
Indeed, yes. Now, I'm sure there can be very few of our listeners, if any at all, that aren't familiar with Dr. Alan Hynek's name, but it might be as well to point out that he was the one who was in charge of Project Blue Book, which I think I'm correct, and you can confirm that or not, which actually finished in 1969.
Yes, he was the scientific advisor on Project Blue Book. He was hired by the government, our military, the Air Force, to actually to debunk all of these sightings that they were having, because he had the credentials. He was the astronomer, he was the astrophysicist, and he was supposed to come up with a very intelligent explanation for these wild stories that people were being abducted by these weird-looking little people. And so he did a very good job. He did it for 20 years, and he came up with things like Venus chasing the moon or swamp gas or, you know, we're having mass hallucinations. But all the time that they were telling the public that there was nothing to it, that they were crazy or whatnot, they were deeply studying the aliens and the ships and wanted to get to know them and wanted to know why they were there and what they were doing, what it was all about. And they found out, because, you know, the story of Eisenhower meeting with the aliens, actually, MJ-12 was organized for that purpose. It was President Truman who put that into effect. And it was top secret. And these high security people were chosen to be on this committee. And they were to find out, you know, why were the aliens here? What was their ulterior motive? And what can we do about it? And so President Eisenhower met with two groups. The first group were very spiritual, and they offered to help us with our spiritual advancement, which is what we're going through right now, and that's why we're in this life right now. But they refused to share any of their technology because they didn't think we were grown up enough to use it in a good way. So they said no, and we would have to get rid of our nuclear programs. Well, you know, Eisenhower was a military man, and that didn't sound like a very good idea to him. So he said, well, no, thank you. And then he met with another group of Greys from Zeta Reticuli, and he signed a contract with them because they agreed to share some of their technology, and that's what they were after. But they also said that they were starting a hybrid breeding program. It was going to be a cross between the Zeta and the human, and they were going to form this race. And they wanted to be able to pick up human beings and take them to their ships and extract the sperm and the ovum and create this hybrid breeding program. So that's what they did, and they were given permission by our president and our government to do this. And they also said to our committee that they wanted this kept hush-hush. They didn't want anybody talking about the fact that they were here. And, well, that was just fine with our government because they didn't want the general public to know anything about it.
Right.
So that's how the whole thing got started. And then, now, and that was back in the 40s, about 1947
right.
was when all of that started.
Yes, I was going to mention the date because that is a long, long time ago. Now, am I correct in thinking the contract, if we call it that, that he had with the Greys was for 60 years?
Yes.
So that means it's already finished. So, I mean, would you be in a position then to know whether or not that was it or whether it was sort of still continued after that date?
No, we've been told that that is finished. We've been told that there are no further abductions for that purpose. That whole idea, that whole program is finished, and those beings are now grown up.
Right.
One thing I'd like to get straight, though, because a lot of times when you say the Zetas, people get a bad taste in their mouth because of this. There are different groups of Zeta Reticuli, and there are those who are much more spiritual, much more concerned about the welfare of humanity than one or two of the other Zeta groups. So it's important that we don't lump them all in together. And there are a lot of other aliens out there, ETs out there, that are short and gray with big eyes that don't come from Zeta Reticuli and have a very different kind of a background. So the trouble with us, I think, is we try to lump everything in together and say, oh, those are the little gray guys, those are the bad guys.
Yes, I'm sure so. Now, talking of little grey guys, I gather that your guides are similar in appearance, certainly facially, to the praying mantis. Now, are all your guides the same?
No, they're not. The one that's with me all the time is quite a large praying mantis, and he's the one that's the most like a praying mantis. And these are very intelligent beings. Extremely intelligent and very concerned about what happens to mankind. The group that came to me up in Wyoming in 1985 were all female, and they were very much, they were E.T. looking somewhat. You know, the movie E.T., and you know his neck, how it was elongated and kind of wrinkly, and can you picture his face? They were a little more like that, especially the ancient one was more like that. But they were female, and they were very regal, and they had very large eyes, but they were round. The eyes were about three times the size of ours, and they were round and beautiful. The love that exuded from those eyes was absolutely incredible. And each one of them had an ornament of some kind on their head. And I don't remember seeing any hair, but they did have these ornaments on their head. One, I remember one had three feathers across the top of her head. And another one had a band across her forehead, somewhat like American Indians wear. Another one had what looked like might have been a very short crown on her head. But these were very, very loving beings. They were all female. They said they had been with me forever, and they would stay with me. That was my concern. I wanted to make sure they were going to be staying with me. And they assured me that they would.
So you might assume from that that wherever they came from might have been, say, your space family. Did you ever learn any information about that?
Well, that was one of the questions I asked them. And at that moment, I had this name in my head. And it was the long form and the short form of the name. And they said, that is correct. And at that moment, it was wiped from my memory, and I've never been able to bring it back.
Oh.
I do, but I will tell you, Mike, that I feel that I have a very strong association with the Sirians.
Right.
I feel very connected to Sirius, yeah.
Well, that's interesting, because so do I. So we're fellow travelers.
I know you do, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. Well, I must say, I mean, for the little I know about your background, you've certainly had a lot of experiences. Now, when you were with Alan Hynek, did you ever get to talk about Project Blue Book? I mean, was he very open about things like that of the past?
No, he was not open about those things. He was very closed mouth. He held things very close to his chest. I would tease with him, and I just knew that he was having experiences with the ETs, and I wanted to know more about it, and so I would tease him about, come on, tell me, you know, I know they're not going to leave you alone. You're the guy that's at the center of all of this. And he would just laugh, or he would just wink, or he would just pass it off and never talked about it. You couldn't get it out of him. He didn't give up much information at all, but he was very adept at getting information from someone. So that's, you know, from years and years of investigating and talking to people, he just had a knack for getting them to talk and getting the details out. After I had my experience in Wyoming and I came back to the office then, he sat with me for 2.5 hours while we taped the experience, and he just sat there and chewed on his pipe the whole time. And then every once in a while he'd give a hum, and then at one point he said, it sounds to me like that was missing time. But other than that, he didn't say much until the end. And then he was the scientist, and unless you could knock on the ship and feel the metal, anything too esoteric he was having trouble with. So there was no ship as such involved in my experience. So that it left it a little bit in the woo-woo category as far as he was concerned.
Right, yes, because I think it's general knowledge that he was originally a very staunch skeptic. So I guess he was ideal for the job of debunking UFOs, etc. But over that long period where I believe he investigated, was it over 12,000 cases, quite a lot.
Yeah.
He was transformed. Now, did he ever mention to you what it was that made him change his mind?
No, not specifically. But I did know that his mind was changed. I did find out too that my suspicion of him walking both sides of the street was true. When Blue Book announced that they were going out of business, that they had investigated everything and there was no point in going any further because there was no threat to mankind, literally it didn't stop. It went underground, and they continued to investigate, but they didn't want the public to know about it. Right. And he left at that time and came out as the real friend of the general public, the real friend of the person who's having the experience, and encouraged them to come to him and tell their stories. So the government was still getting the information, and yet their investigations went underground. They were all doing it underground and didn't have to publicize anything to the general public. They actually started working with the aliens back in 1952, they were working with, and have been working with them ever since. So when he was summoned to, I forget what the name of the Air Force base was, over in California, it was just sort of a, well, he didn't tell us anything about the visit that he had on the air base. but they would always invite him to come and see things and discuss things that they had. But we also thought, because it was shortly after that that he was diagnosed with prostate cancer, we also thought that maybe he had been terminated at that point, too. Mm. And they're still terminating people. That Chinese scientist was just terminated over there in South America. I think it was Chile.
Yes, I think it is generally known that if you do the wrong things, as it were, or particularly say the wrong things, you are lined up for dismissal.
And I think he had just lived out his usefulness at that point, and he knew too much. He knew too much. But on his last, the last time I saw him before he died, he hadn't been doing any research for quite some time. He said to me, "I want you to know I have had my own experiences." So he gave me that little gift before he left, at least validating what I thought I knew.
Right. So did he, was it correct that he was so sort of transformed by his sudden belief in UFOs, etc., that he was used by Spielberg to help him sort of make his close encounters of the third kind more realistic?
Yes, yes. And that he was the scientific advisor on that film, and the contract with Spielberg read that Spielberg could use the term close encounters of the third kind anywhere in the universe. And he paid Hynek $1,000 for that.
Oh,
and then I know it's just ridiculous. And then he gave him a little cameo part in the movie. He was in the movie.
Oh.
And he loved every minute of that Hollywood experience. He really enjoyed that. But a lot of what was in that movie was very real and came from the files. You know, SERPO was the term used for a group of our people that were being exchanged for the aliens, and they would go to the planet SERPO and experience life there, while some of the ETs stayed here and experienced life. And I believe that really did happen. And I think what Spielberg probably asked Hynek, well, what if we had people, you know, going to another planet and so forth? And Hynek said, well, yeah, you could probably use that. That might be a good part of the story. without actually coming out and confirming anything. But the fact that they, you know, they found the World War II planes in the desert, those things have actually happened. So there was a lot of truth there. And just recently at our film festival here in Sedona this past year, we had a special, Close Encounters of the Third Kind showing special at the film festival, and I spoke. And then they honored the special effects person. I forget what his name is now, but the special effects person lived here in Sedona, and he did a lot of work for the film festival here. And he had died in the meantime, and so they were honoring him with this. It was very nice, very touching.
Indeed, yes. Well, of course, Sedona is one of the places to be, isn't it?
Well, it seems so. We do know that we have a lot of ships overhead, and you can see them. You can, if you're at all sensitive, you can feel them. I've had some of the ETs in the house. They are not showing themselves physically, though, but I can hear them. They're talking, and they've actually touched me, so I've felt them. So I know they're here, and I know they're watching out for us. And there are just a lot of very sensitive people who live here, who have been doing light work for a very long period of time.
I must say, I am impressed by your very matter-of-fact approach to all these things. You speak of it so naturally as though everybody has the same experiences.
Well, you know, it's been a lot of years that that I've been working with this and talking about it and dealing with it and asking for it. I've been asking for communication and asking for them to come, and I really do believe that I'm from another star system, and that I'm here to do whatever I can to help people wake up.
Right, yes. Well, I think one does feel that when you have come to the Earth for a special purpose, I think for one thing your guides would make sure that the opportunities crossed your path, and also probably make sure that you accepted them. And the last thing you want to do is to come to the Earth and, I think, miss the reason that you came here. I mean, you talk of yourself as having a mission, and that's what it is, isn't it?
Wouldn't it be a bummer, you know, if you didn't complete your mission after all this harangue that we've gone through? And the same for you, Mike. It's a very similar situation for you, too. And thank God for our guides that they keep us on the straight and narrow.
That's right. Yes, indeed.
Sometimes it's not quite so straight.
No, it's not easy at times, but there you are. I think intuitively people ought to know when they are doing what they came to the Earth. I certainly feel happy in my work, and you sound very much at ease and happy in yours.
Well, you know, it's where our passion is. And we've come here to live our passions, and I go to work on a daily basis, and it's a wonderful nursing kind of a thing, but it's not my passion. My passion is this, talking about the fact that there are these wonderful beings on other planets, and that this whole solar system is just teeming with life. And that there are so many more dimensions that we need to get to, and so many more wonderful things that we need to experience. And we're pretty much at the bottom of the barrel here in third dimension. So we're being given this opportunity in this life to make a giant leap forward and to go to the fourth and the fifth dimension. And it'll be a long time before that opportunity comes around again. That's why it's so important that we're living here on the Earth right now. Also, the earthquakes and the tsunamis and all of that, everything that's coming with Planet X, has been slowed down by the Council of Worlds because they're giving us more time to wake up. They're giving us more time to choose to be spiritual beings and care about each other. That's why we're here, to choose. Are we going to be service to self or service to others? And if we choose service to others and we truly care about our fellow man, we're going to have this wonderful lifting into the fourth and fifth dimension. And it's a matter of just lifting our vibration high enough so we can survive. And I do believe that the rapture that is spoken of in the Bible is actually the ETs coming and lifting us into their beams of light up into the ships. And we can only be lifted in those beams of light if our vibration is complementary with that vibration of that light. So that's why it's important for us to be caring and loving and spiritual, and it's why it's important for us to meditate, and I happen to believe it's important to be a vegetarian. We know that pretty much all of the aliens that we've been associated with have been vegetarians for a long, long time. So they know that there's importance in it. So that's what's going on right now. And, you know, as we speak, the cells of our bodies are changing. And they're changing to crystalline base from a carbon base. And we are becoming light beings as we speak. You know, it's just going to be wonderful when this is all said and done.
Absolutely, yes. Well, it's funny you should mention Planet X and about it being slowed down, because I was going to ask you that if the levels of consciousness raise sufficiently, and I understand they are rising quite dramatically, logically that should lessen the impact of the changes that are going to take place. And I guess that's really what the message is you're giving, isn't it?
Well, in a way it is, yes. For the last 2 years, I've been saying, well, you know, we're all going to go through this in about 6 months. And here we are 2 years later, and we haven't gone through it yet.
Right, yes.
What the Zetas are saying, or what the Council of Worlds is saying, is that they're running the show, and they've deemed that they can slow down the sequence of events so that they're not as severe. As you know, if an earthquake would happen, one bing, 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 one right after the other, and the tsunami would be much more severe. This way they're stretching it out so that actually some of the pretty big earthquakes that we've been having recently haven't had any tsunami at all. And I was very worried about England, because they were predicting that there would be a 300-foot tsunami coming and crashing into England.
Right.
But that seems to have been mitigated a little bit, because they've given us more time. But there is going to be a point in time when the brake is going to have to be let loose. Right now, the Indo-Australian plate, tectonic plate, is locked in, and it's that break. Once that slips and lets go, then all the other tectonic plates are going to be allowed to go. So at some point, there will be pretty massive earth changes. But when that's going to happen, I don't know. We see Planet X. We're taking pictures of Planet X. It's there. And it's moving, and it's bringing all this debris with it, and it's bringing the moons with it. And it's at less than 30 million miles away from us right now. So it's less than halfway between the sun and the Earth. When it passes by us, it'll be about 14 million miles away. But this tail is like about 5 million miles further out into space. And that'll be whipping around. And every so often, we get something from the tail here. We'll get fireballs. We've gotten meteorites. And the Earth, you know, is in this dance with Planet X right now. And it's this electromagnetic exchange. But since Planet X is so much bigger than Earth, it's going to be harder on us. And so our planet is wobbling back and forth. And you can tell that if you watch the sky at night. Pick a constellation and take a look at it every night at the same time, and you'll see that it's changing. I picked the Big Dipper. And it's absolutely incredible what it's been doing here. Out of the right side of the window, it goes up over the house. And then within a couple of hours, it's coming back around to the same side of the house, when it should have gone over the house and over the horizon. Mm-hmm. So we're in a fairly severe wobble. And that's why people are experiencing a lot of a lot of aches and pains, a lot of headaches, a lot of trouble sleeping. With most of the people that I'm talking with here, they're just up and down all night long. It's been quite a long time since somebody has had a really good night's sleep. So also you feel a little nauseated sometimes, but it doesn't last very long. I think that's due to the wobble, to us actually moving. So these things now, are happening.
Yes, indeed. Now, wouldn't the question be asked here that if all this is known to the beings on Nibiru itself, why do they come relatively near, knowing that this sort of damage could be caused to us?
Well, it's their orbit. They have this set orbit that they're in, and it comes around every 3,600 years. And it depends upon our declination and our tilt and our everything, how close they come to us. And there are many passages when they haven't come nearly as close as this one. You know, when Noah and the Ark and the Flood, that was one passage. Another passage was when Moses led the Jews out of Egypt. That was not a very close passage. So they didn't have the massive changes as we're going to have. But this time, it's coming in very close. So we're expecting that it's going to do more damage. But we don't need to worry about it. We shouldn't worry about it. All we should pay attention to our lives and our spiritual work and our loved ones. We have plenty of time now still to make peace with our own God and to tell our loved ones how much we love them and to ask for forgiveness if that's necessary. And then put your faith and trust in the fact that we are being lifted. We are becoming more spiritual. We are being elevated. And I do believe that a lot of the ships will be lifting people out of harm's way. It may be only temporary, and then they may bring us back and set us back down. Or we may be lifted and taken to ships that are already waiting for us, and artificial planets that are waiting for us. They've made all kinds of preparations for us. But then a lot of us are just going to choose to drop our body and go on to our next life. And I for one, am not attached to the third dimension. I don't particularly want to stay here much longer.
Or your body, you mean?
Yeah.
Right. Now, your book covers some of your own personal experiences, quite obviously, but I'd love you to tell, as far as you can, our listeners about your experience at Doug and Connie Tipton's ranch.
Oh, okay. Well, this was while I was working for Dr. Hynek, and it was in the summer, and since he couldn't pay me very much to work for him. And in reality, I would have done it for nothing. But anyway, this was a perk that he gave me, was this trip up to Laramie, Wyoming, to meet Dr. Sprinkle, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who had a UFO conference every year at the University of Wyoming. He was a psychologist at the university, a teacher. So I was all excited and took the plane up to Denver or up to Colorado Springs and then rented a car and drove the rest of the way up. And the whole trip, I was asking for contact. I thought, oh, this is great. We'll be out. We'll be away from the city. We'll be in the wide open spaces and, you know, maybe contact will happen. So this happened to be all the way through the conference. I was meeting lots of wonderful people, and I heard about this ranch that was outside of Laramie. I forget the guy's name. Pat McGuire. Pat McGuire's ranch. And the story about this ranch was that he had drilled and drilled and drilled for water, and he couldn't find any water on the ranch at all. One day, a UFO landed on his ranch. The aliens got out, and they showed him exactly where to drill for water. He got the drilling company out, and they drilled there, and he had water and has had water ever since. So everybody wanted to get out there because there were all kinds of stories about people seeing the aliens out there, seeing the UFOs, having all kinds of experiences. So that was one thing that I wanted to do while I was there, but I was always busy doing something else when a car filled would go out there. So So Doug and Connie Tipton were organizers of this UFO conference, and they said, well, if you want to stay over an extra day, we'll take you out to the ranch. So I thought, well, that'd be great. So I spent the morning with Dr. Sprinkle, and he put me under hypnosis, and we took me back through about 8 past life cycles. This man has incredible ability to extract this information from your soul. And he did a lot of hypnotizing people who had had UFO experiences to get the experience out. Well, anyway, I spent the morning doing that and then met up with them in the afternoon, and we went out to the ranch. And they said, well, you need to walk the land. It seems to be important that you walk the land. So we started walking the land. And there was a herd of antelope down on the lower level of the ranch. We were up on kind of a rise, and then there were some mountains off in the distance. And then in between the mountains, there was kind of a dip that looked a bit like a window. And they were telling me that that's the portal. That was where the ships seemed to come through. Now, I knew nothing about these people, except they lived in Wyoming and they were UFO people. That's all I knew. So I'm walking with them, and all of a sudden, the antelope, 2 buck antelope, charge up the hill and stand by a pile of rocks, just like a couple of sentries, and look straight at us. And when I got the message that this is where you're supposed to stand, they took off. So we walked up to the rocks, and we were standing there, and we were talking, and Doug said, I'm picking up 3 ships, and he started drawing a picture of them in the dirt with a stick. And I started to pick up some information, and I could see a man and a woman that was there. And then Doug said, I get the impression they have to ask permission. And I said, yes, that's it. They have to ask permission of my spiritual master. And at that time, right then, the image of my spiritual master was in my third eye, just as strong as it could be, and he gave permission. And with that, I closed my eyes, and I put my arms out in front of me, and I was hit with a beam of light right in my forehead. And with my eyes closed, all I could see was pink light, and it got stronger and stronger and whiter and whiter and whiter, and my body started to convulse, and this energy was shooting down my spine and out my tailbone. Some of it was going out my left leg. My body was shaking. The pain was incredible. It was like somebody was just jamming a steel rod down my back, and it eventually pushed me all the way to the ground. And then this brilliant white light just exploded, and it was like the 4th of July sparklers going off inside my head. Well, I didn't know what had happened. While this was going on, I felt like I was being lifted off the ground, but my eyes were sealed shut, so I couldn't see what was happening. And there a couple of thoughts went through my mind. The first one was, I'm going somewhere. And the second one was, I'm changing souls. And the next thing I knew, I was in great pain, and I was on the ground, and then opening my eyes, and Connie came running over and said, are you all right? And I looked up at her, and I said, I don't think I can stand up. I don't think I can walk on this leg. And she looked at me and she said, oh, Doug, come over here and look at her eyes. And the blue, my eyes are normally blue, and the blue part of the eyes were bleached perfectly white. There was no color at all in my eyes. Well, I started to tell them what had happened or what I had felt, and we got up and we started walking, and I said, well, shall we go now? And they said, well, is that all you want? And I said, well, I'm not sure I want any more of this. You know, it was a little bit like being electrocuted. And they just kind of laughed, and we walked a little bit further, and then this gigantic storm blew up. And the lightning, you would not believe, the wind, the rain, it was just torrents. And we went running back to the truck, got in the truck, and went about 25 feet, and we ran out of gas. Well, they'd never run out of gas in their life. This was just a ruse to get us to stay there. So Doug left to walk to the farmhouse to see if he couldn't get a ride into town to get some gas, and that left three of us women in the truck. And I had this compulsion to close my eyes every so often, and every time I did, I was shown a symbol. And I was shown five symbols. The first one was the dragon in the sky, and that's where the title of the book came. This dragon was flipping its tail back and forth and back and forth in the sky, very much alive, very angry. And then there was a three-pronged trident. There was an emerald-cut gemstone. It was clear, so I didn't know whether it was crystal or whether it was diamond. And also the Maltese cross. And the fifth symbol was the arrow pointing straight up. And I've played with those symbols forever since then, and I'm not quite sure what the full message was. But I felt that these, after researching these, that these all had something to do with Nibiru and the history of Nibiru. So then we decided we would go into town and we would get something to eat, still pouring down rain, and we would change clothes and go back out because we felt that the whole thing wasn't finished yet. So we had dinner and we got big mugs of coffee and started to leave. And the idea of going out into the open with this pouring rain didn't really appeal to us at that time. It was pretty much midnight at that time. So this was where we had lost some time. And this is where Dr. Hynek thought it was missing time. So I said to Doug and Connie, why don't you just get your pillows and blankets from the truck and come on up to my room in the dorm and spend the night up there, and we'll see if there's anything more that's supposed to transpire. So we did that, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, we were just sitting around talking, and all of a sudden Connie's face began to change. She began to morph into these beings. Actually, they were projecting themselves over the top half of her. I didn't know I didn't know that Connie was a medium, and this had only happened to her once before. But when I said, Connie, your face is changing, she said, Doug, take my hand. This is going to be a heavy one. And so he did, and with that, they came in one after the other after the other. The whole room filled with them. We could just feel their presence all around. The love was incredible. We talked to them for quite a long time. And then they said, we will now yield to a higher power. Well, I was just blown away. I thought they were pretty high-powered. But in came this ancient, ancient, beautiful female being that looked more like E.T. Than the other ones did. And when I saw her, I just wanted to stay with her forever. She was just, I don't know, she was just the epitome of love, of motherhood, I guess, of nurturing, of, she was wonderful. And I asked her what had happened to me out on the ranch, and she said, well, in your language, you would call it an initiation. And she said, you have been given higher or greater powers, and we will be with you. Or I asked if they would stay with me, and she said they had always been with me. And she said, you will be receiving direct communication from now on, and said that my dreams had been prophetic and would continue to be. So that was the upshot of the whole thing. When they left the room, you could just feel that energy leaving the room. And the sun came up over the horizon. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. So we had been with them and talking with them for 3 hours at that point. They left and then came back at one point and did a little exercise with us to sort of heighten our sensitivity and sharpen our abilities. It was an absolutely incredible experience. I'll never forget it. And I long for them to come back. And they have. They have come back. They've let me know when they're here.
It's a wonder that you weren't so upset, if you like, that you wanted to carry on. I mean, that was quite a... Well, in some respects, a very unpleasant experience, wasn't it, when you felt the pain?
Right. It was extremely painful. Yeah. It was just like your whole body cramping at one time. Just incredible. So I believe it was a Kundalini-like experience. It definitely was. My Kundalini was associated with that. And as far as being lifted off the ground or as far as... soul being exchanged, I'm not sure about all that.
Right. Now, just as a quickie here, I noticed, I recalled that you mentioned that at one time your guide told you to read Tsetsuraya Sitchin's book, 12th Planet, because there was something in it for you. Now, did you ever do that and find out what it was?
Yes, I did. It was in 1989 when I was told that, and I went right out and got the book, The 12th Planet, because I couldn't imagine what message was for me in that book, but it was all about Planet X, about Nibiru, and little did I know that I'd be talking to the world about Planet X and Nibiru. So that was the message that, yes, in fact, there is such a thing, and this is the time that it's coming back.
Right, yes, because I also have that book and some other ones of Tsetsuraya's, and they're excellent.
I was just going to say that the publisher that I have traveled with Tsetsuraya Sitchin and was his cameraman for 3 years.
Right. Well, yes, he's a wonderful writer, and the amount of detail he puts in them is astonishing. So they can be, I think, for that reason, with so many different names, hard going, but they're very interesting, I must say. Now, we've been having such a good time here, and that we're getting near the last sort of 3 or 4 minutes of the program. So I'd like you to take an opportunity to give our listeners whatever website you want to pass on, and tell them how they can obtain your book.
Okay, my website is www.annnelleer.com. You can also get there by dragoninthesky.com. And there's a lot of good information up there. I try to keep it current. You can order the book through the site, or you can go to Amazon.com, or you can go directly to the publisher and get the book. But the other two websites that I would like everybody to look at, the one that has all the current information about what's happening around the world as far as Planet X coming in, is Poleshift-Ning. It's Earth Changes Pole Shift -Ning. There is so much information, accurate, up-to-date information on that website. Everybody needs to do that. And also ZetaTalk.com. These are websites. ZetaTalk.com. That's Nancy Leader's website. And she's the emissary for the Zeta Reticuli beings who are charged with giving us this information.
Right. Now, when you gave the Earth Shifts Pole Shift site, what was that word on the end? Did you say Ming?
No, Ning. Ning as in Nancy. N-I-N-G.
Oh, got it. Okay, I wasn't sure.
Pole Shift and then a hyphen. And then Ning as in Nancy. ing.
So and that is that dot. That's dot com, presumably.
Pardon?
Is that dot com after that?
Let's see. Earth changes full shift. You don't have to put dot com. It'll come right up. I mean, there's so many. They have a lot of mirror sites because there's so many people around the world that are getting their information off of this.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fine. I'm going to have to thank you very much for coming onto the program. It's been wonderful talking with you, and I know.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's been great talking to you too.
Thank you very much. I've been lucky enough to be able to ask you my questions, so that's great. Anyway, I wish you every success with the book, and thanks again for coming on. It's been a wonderful time with you.
Well, I read your transmissions, and I just want to say God bless.
thank you, Anne.
All right, okay, friends. Bye-bye,
Anne. Next week, I've got David Santangelo. He's on a journey to help people realize who they truly are. And what he wants to do is tell us about his work as an Arcturian channel. And he tells us that 2 years ago he was visited by the Governing Council of Arcturus. So, again, that should be another very interesting guest. So, thank you for being with me today. And I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.